Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Perfect timing for a show. No, not because it's Thursday, but because the Oregon Ducks landed four-star linebacker Jared Casey today. And I got to be honest, normally pretty comfortable when I make a prediction. Feel very good about it. Usually I've either interviewed the kid ahead of time or I've got some bit of knowledge where I feel extremely confident. This time I talked to Jared Casey and then he went on a visit to Wisconsin. And there were rumblings that maybe Wisconsin had turned him. But when I had last talked to him, Oregon was the clear-cut leader. So I felt pretty good, but not great. Jared Casey commits to the Oregon Ducks today. One of the top, either the number 16 or number 17 inside linebacker in the country, according to 24/7 Sports Arrivals, depending on which one you use. However, he's going to play outside linebacker for the Ducks. And now Oregon has a trio of the best linebackers they've ever gotten in one class. Jamon Eifert, Under Armour All-American, one of the top 100 prospects in the entire country. Jared Casey, who we just talked about, who missed most or parts of his sophomore year and all of his junior year. He's come on the scene and been bonkers in spring evaluations, spring and summer camps, and then this fall on film. Looks the part of a big-time prospect. He's added a fourth star. And then Mace Funa, the modern-day linebacker who's out for the season with a knee injury. Mace Funa is the highest-rated linebacker Oregon has ever gotten in a recruiting class. So that's big news. Oregon, three big-time linebackers. Jared Casey, I believe, is going to join the show. He's confirmed he was going to join the show. We talked about it after he retweeted that he was going to join the show. And then he may have fallen asleep because I tried texting him. It is 10 o'clock there. He said he was going to try to stay up and make it. We will see if he makes it for the show. He, again, has confirmed he wants to do the show. We'll see if he's going to show up. And then today, Nebraska coach Scott Frost accuses Oregon State of tampering. You had to know this was coming. Oregon State adds linebacker Avery Roberts, a former four-star prospect, one of the top 10 inside linebackers in the entire country. They add Tristan Jebbia, the quarterback who is likely going to be the starter for Oregon State next season. They add Tyjon Lindsey on Friday. Greg Bell announces he's transferring. His initial list of schools that are blocked didn't include Oregon State. He gets an updated list that includes Oregon State. And then Scott Frost comes out and says this about Oregon State adding transfers. There's no doubt in my mind that those kids were probably in touch with some people that they formally knew that we're here. He added, if someone is contacting our kids while they're still our kids, then I'm not going to be a fan of that. By the way, I've reported sources close to Oregon State say they are very confident protocol was followed. But Scott Frost, I'm sorry. I've done this before with Scott Frost. I have to call him out. He's a hypocrite. And he's shown when it comes to recruiting, he hopes you're not paying attention. He's done this before. Now, remember, this is a coach who said, quote, after he left Oregon, Oregon wasn't and isn't close in proximity to the fertile recruiting ground. At the end of the day, recruits have to decide to lead Southern California or Georgia or Florida or Texas, where there's some other pretty good schools, and go all the way to Eugene. He was criticized for not being able to land consistent top 25 classes while he was at Oregon. His excuse was proximity to a major recruiting hotbed. Mario Cristobal has debunked that comment. Mario Cristobal has blasted that comment into oblivion. Oregon has the number three recruiting class in the country. And then, after Nick Saban played Tua Tagovailoa in the second half of Alabama's national championship game, the one where Tua led him on a come-from-behind victory, Scott Frost had this to say. It was a decision I don't know if I would have been courageous enough to make. That's the answer you want to hear. The other answer is that he was pretty obviously better than what they had, and it took him 12 games to figure that out, and he didn't. Coach Saban is above criticism with everything he's accomplished, so I don't mean it that way. But I recruited Tua out of high school and knew what he could do, and it doesn't surprise me that he did what he did. Hold the phone on that one, Coach Frost. Yes, you were the point man on Tua Tagovailoa, and you didn't pull the trigger. I talked to Tua when he was a sophomore and said, I want to follow in Marcus Mariota's footsteps. I want to go to Oregon. I want to be the next Marcus Mariota. I want to be a Duck. The Ducks ignored him. He begged him. Again, I followed up with another story. Tua wonders why Oregon is losing contact. Again, Scott Frost and Oregon ignored him. He picked up an offer from Alabama, committed to Alabama, became the MVP of the Elite 11 and the MVP of the opening. Finally, Oregon came in with a scholarship offer. He's criticizing Nick Saban that it took him 12 games? It took Scott Frost 2 years. And by the way, Oregon never offered Tua when Scott Frost was the coach. Oregon offered Tua Tagovailoa after Scott Frost left because Scott Frost thought they had better options elsewhere. So for Scott Frost to even begin, to say, I knew what Tua was. No, you didn't. That's why Oregon didn't get Tua Tagovailoa. Now, Oregon's pretty happy they've got Justin Herbert. I think Oregon feels pretty good about who they ended up with. But to criticize Nick Saban and say, it took him 12 games, you want me to say that's some great thing? It's not. We knew who Tua was when I was at Oregon. No, you didn't. Oregon never even offered Tua while you were at Oregon. You're hoping we don't notice. This is also the same coach who plucked graduate transfer Trey Neal away from Central Florida, a safety. Trey Neal was one of the best players on Central Florida's defense. When Scott Frost left, he brought Trey Neal to Nebraska with him and made him a leader of that secondary. Scott Frost has done what he's accusing Oregon State of doing, bringing talent. Now, that's his problem. What he's implying is that Mike Riley and Trent Bray stayed in contact with former players when they went from Nebraska to Oregon State, continued to talk to him and tried to persuade them to come to Oregon State. That's his criticism. That's his gripe. This is the same coach, by the way, who left Central Florida knowing full well he had a landing spot at Nebraska. Now he has a hard time with the players. He says, well, these players knew they had a landing spot at Oregon State before they asked for their release. You did the same thing less than a year ago. And you're the same coach who keeps coming back time and time again when it comes to recruiting and saying untruths and half-truths and hoping we're not paying attention. I covered you, man. I've been paying attention. It's too hard to recruit to Oregon. You can't recruit to Oregon consistently because it's not in proximity to a great program. False. I knew what Tua Tagovailoa was. I recruited it. That's why I recruited him to Oregon. Nick Saban didn't do anything great. False. It's wrong to recruit players from your former school. You shouldn't be able to do it. You shouldn't get to do it. That's what he's basically saying. He did it himself 6 months ago. False. I think Scott Frost is a very good football coach. I do. But I think time and time again, he hopes you're not paying attention. He hopes we're all not paying attention. Scott Frost, when it comes to recruiting, is an absolute hypocrite. He's an absolute hypocrite. You cannot take players from Central Florida to Nebraska and then get mad that Oregon State got a couple former players who, by the way, already had connections to the program. You want to know why Tristan Jebbia transferred? It's been widely rumored Tristan Jebbia found out he didn't get the starting job on Twitter. Maybe that's why he wanted to transfer. Maybe he wanted to go to the Pac-12 and he was familiar with Mike Riley. Tyjon Lindsey and Tristan Jebbia reportedly had great chemistry on and off the field while they were in Nebraska. Tyjon Lindsey wanted to go with a quarterback he was comfortable with. By the way, Tyjon Lindsey, does that fall in line with what he does? Let's follow the reasoning there. Tyjon potentially went to Oregon State because he was comfortable with Tristan Jebbia. Tyjon Lindsey transferred in high school to a school in a different state to play with Tate Martell at Bishop Gorman. He moved in with Tate Martell's family because he had a strong relationship with Tate Martell on and off the field. Tyjon Lindsey follows good quarterbacks. That's in his DNA. So is it a stretch to say Tristan Jebbia saw playing time in the Pac-12 and Tyjon Lindsey followed him? No. It's also been widely reported that and rumored that Tyjon Lindsey was blocked from going to Oregon State, so he had to enroll on his own as an unrecruited kid. Nice, Scott Frost. By the way, none of this matters starting Monday. This is the thing that baffles me. All this stuff, okay, we talked about all this. None of it matters starting Monday because the NCAA's new rules that prohibit schools from blocking players from picking schools after they transfer, when they want to transfer, that goes out the window. Kids can transfer wherever they want starting Monday and schools can't block them. So none of this matters. This is Scott Frost being angry that he's losing. This is Scott Frost being angry that he lost depth. This is Scott Frost being disappointed at what's going on at Nebraska and trying to pass the buck and play victim. And this is a Scott Frost who time and again, as I pointed out earlier, has hoped when it comes to recruiting, you're not paying attention. We're paying attention, Scott Frost. You're dead wrong here. Again, sources close to Oregon State say, we were very confident we handled protocol. Oregon State saying, sources close to Oregon State saying, we're very confident we handled protocol properly when it comes to transfers. Scott Frost, get out of here, man. Go win some games. Go win some games in Lincoln. Stop worrying about where your former players are at. It's not working for you. But to be honest, not a lot is working for you. Oregon landed a four-star linebacker in Jared Casey. We'll get a chance to talk to him next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 10 of the Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
No luck with Jared Casey. We tried him a couple times, confirmed more than once that he was going to do the show. It's getting late there. Might have crashed. But Marcus, it gives us a chance to talk about this Scott Frost Oregon State situation. First of all, this seems like to me, and you're a former player, you were running back at Oregon State. This seems to me like, even if it were true, and I don't think it is, that it's not a big deal. People continue relationships after they go to school all the time.
Yeah, I just don't understand it because, I mean, they're leaving for a reason, right? Whether it's playing time, they just don't like the program, they don't get along with whoever, but regardless, they're leaving for a reason. So is there really a reason for Scott Frost to be upset? Obviously not, at least to me. From outside looking in, like you and I say, it's kind of pointless.
Well, the other huge piece here is if he were like a third or fourth year coach, fine, I get it. You lose three or four players and you're upset about it. This happens. If guys don't earn starting jobs and they anticipate that they're going to start or they're going to get a playing time, more playing time, a lot of times when there's a new coaching staff, it's a new system, and they transfer. And often, if the previous staff has new jobs, they go elsewhere. I mean, you look at the flip side of this, and Oregon State lost one of their key corners to Central Michigan, who followed Corey Hall this year. And Oregon State didn't say anything about it. And I'm 100% sure that kid has a relationship with Corey Hall. I believe Xavier Crawford is the guy who went to Central Michigan.
Yeah, it was Xavier.
Yeah. It happened to Oregon State. They don't say anything. Oregon State does it, and Scott Frost, again, wants to raise noise. Anything that happens in recruiting that doesn't go his way, he seems to want to pass the buck, knowing that high school kids can't really say anything about a coach. Like, we recruited to it. No, you didn't. It's hard to recruit to Oregon, knowing full well that kids aren't going to go, that guy's full of crap, we would go to Oregon, or that Oregon's not going to take shots at him.
Right.
And now in this case, he takes shots at Oregon State, hoping, beyond all hope, that it somehow leads to an investigation or leads to something, or simply just to make an excuse. I just think it's poor form by Scott Frost, particularly when this whole block thing, Nebraska's blocking players from transferring to Oregon State, those blocks only last until Monday, and then the new rules go into place and the NCAA won't enforce them. So It's doing it just to be petty. I mean, he's literally blocking Greg Bell from going to Oregon State for like 4 days.
Right.
If Greg Bell even wants to go, and if Oregon State even wants to go there, and by all accounts, they seem to be full at running back. It just seems pointless. I mean, it just seems like it's done just to make noise.
It really does, because like you were saying in the last segment, it's just these players and all these guys, like, they form relationships with these coaches, right? And so when Coach Riley was there, that's probably it. A lot of these players probably formed some relationship with either Coach Riley, Coach Bray, whoever else. And then when they leave, if they're not going to get playing time and they're not going to start, obviously they're going to want to leave, all right? These guys are highly recruited guys, and so they want to go to play. Like, that's why you play. You don't play to – or you don't go to a school to sit on the sideline in pads.
And that is why it's really, really hard to hit a team with sanctions for this in any way other than even very, very minor secondary violations, is there are so many relationships that go on in college football that people don't understand. And it's even player to player. There are former Oregon high school kids who, you know, Central Catholic's got kids at both schools, Jesuits got, and they still talk to each other. There are situations where guys come from powerhouse programs and they talk to other players at other programs and say, hey, I'm not happy here. Do you think I'd have a spot? And another player says, yeah, man, the quarterbacks on our roster suck. You could definitely play. And then they say, okay, I'm going to get my release and contact the coach. That happens a lot. And that's not a violation. You can't police that kind of stuff. And I don't think people understand the depth of these relationships. I still talk to a bunch of kids that were recruits from Oregon and Oregon State. I still talk to kids who are at UCLA and wherever, because I got to know them when they were being recruited by those schools. That relationship isn't like, oh, I'm an Oregon reporter still trying to build a relationship in case they train. I just have a relationship at this point. I don't think people understand that.
Yeah, I don't think people do, but it's just crazy to me, because with the whole Scott Frost thing, like, does it really keep him up at night? Like, the thing that he should be worrying about is, right, winning games, building up his program, and keeping his fans happy, because being 0-5, what is that, the worst start Nebraska's had in over, 100 years or
something like that.
Yeah.
And, right. And all this stuff is so hard to prove. You look at the basketball investigation, and one of the major, major concerns, and I'm apologize because I read an article about it, and I'm not going to be able to cite that author. He wrote a column about it. I believe it was on CBS Sports. And he says, if there's a go-between, and the go-between is Adidas gave money to a handler who gave money to a kid, even if it's to go to Kansas, North Carolina, if the coach isn't directly involved, now you have idiots like the NC State assistant who reportedly gave money to Dennis Smith Jr. But for the most part, there's a go-between for a go-between to the person. The NCAA is going to have a really hard time proving that the schools were behind that. Now, if Adidas and Nike push kids to go to their programs, that's an Adidas and Nike problem. But if the school doesn't have a specific, if the FBI doesn't have a specific wiretap that indicates that an assistant coach gave the money or an assistant coach gave the go-ahead, but rather an Adidas exec says, we'd like to get him to, or, you know, Oregon would like to get this kid to their school and they're willing to give $100,000, that doesn't actually lead to any sanctions. There's no proof there. That's hearsay. And that's the problem with this investigation. That's the problem with Scott Frost's allegations, is you have to prove tampering. And it's really, really difficult, because you don't have to give bank records. You don't have to hand your phone over. You could say, we choose not to do it. And the NCAA can't really do anything.
Well, man, I'm just so caught up on the Scott Frost stuff, because in that, you just made great points, and it's just, you should be worried about so much more things. Just with the NCAA when it comes to that basketball scandal too, right? Like, it's he said that this person gave whoever money and all this, and the story goes on and on and on. You're just like, man, like, is this even true, or is it like everyone's just trying to find something to get Oregon in trouble, right?
Well, the Oregon situation, we got through it and cleared kind of that first hurdle in terms of the day. As a reporter, you get through those first couple days. Brian Bowen Sr. initially took the stand and said he didn't recall an offer from Oregon. Then he was cross-examined and he was shown his FBI testimony and again said he didn't recall. That pretty much ends it, because you don't have the parent cooperating. Now, maybe maybe down the road he changes his mind, or maybe there's more evidence to come. But in terms of the NCAA getting involved in the Brian Bowen Sr. situation and Brian Bowen Jr., his son, it's kind of dead on the vine. Because, yes, the Adidas guy says, well, Nike was offering money too. But if Oregon just says, well, that's an excuse and you have no evidence, and Brian Bowen Sr. says, I don't remember an offer from Oregon, that's it.
Yeah, then what can you do?
What, what can you do? And that's the problem that people, I don't think, understand with the NCAA. If you don't have subpoena power, if you don't have the ability to see bank statements, by the way, anybody who deposits their money is an idiot when it comes to that kind of stuff. You can do cash transactions and keep that money on hand, but that's a whole nother story. You know, it's really hard to prove. And the NCAA doesn't have the same reach as the FBI, which is why everyone's so intrigued by this. But yet, even when the FBI's involved, we're still dealing with the same issue that if there's a go-between for a go-between, unless, and in some cases the FBI does, but in others they don't, has specific ties where the school is the one handing the money or the school's the one on the wiretap saying, yes, give him $80,000. There isn't anything the NCAA can do as far as sanctions are concerned.
Right. And it's just, like you said, it's just end of the road. If the parent doesn't recall, there's no proof or anything like that, then, like you said, man, it's kind of over with. Like, as unfortunate as it is for whoever is upset that, right, it just maybe not be true, but whatever the case is, it's just not. If nobody can recall and there's no records, then you kind of just have to believe him.
Oregon had a bye week last week. Not a lot of recruits in town. They've got an all-star cast coming into Eugene this weekend. But first, Oregon State did have a home game. They hosted a number of visitors, and one of my absolute favorite prospects in the entire Northwest, three-star athlete Sawyer Racanelli, visited Oregon State this past weekend. I want to talk to him about his trip. That's next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Oregon State hosted some key visitors this past weekend during their loss to Washington State, and one of them is one of my favorite kids in the entire Northwest. He's three-star athlete Sawyer Racanelli from Hawkinson. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I cannot believe, and I've seen, this could be wrong, is your loan offer Oregon State?
Yeah.
That blows my mind. That blows my mind. You have to be hearing from other schools. Who else are you hearing from at this point? You seem like you'd be a multi-offer kid.
I'm hearing from UCLA, UW, Cal, Utah, Oregon, Purdue. I've heard from a couple other schools like Nevada.
One of the things I like about your game is you're just a pure football player. Some wide receiver, some linebacker, a little bit of everything, just nasty on the field. Where do you project at the college level? Where do you feel most comfortable?
Honestly, I feel comfortable either one. I like receiver, but I also like playing defense a little bit too because I like the contact and stuff. So, honestly, it's just wherever coaches feel I fit best and wherever I can help the team the most.
In terms of your visit to Oregon State, they're your lone offer. First, how much does it help when your first offer comes from a Pac-12 school? Do you feel like that puts them a little bit ahead of everybody else because they believed in you first? Does that not really matter? How do you feel about getting a first offer from a Pac-12 school?
Oh, no, it's huge in the recruiting process. Oregon State, I told my parents, I said, they're going to be in one of my top choices just because they were one of the first schools to take a chance on me. And, you know, with having a Pac-12 offer as your first offer, it kind of takes away those other schools, like maybe like a smaller Big Sky, because maybe they think that they don't have a chance or whatever because the Pac-12 school already offered.
Yeah, you're right. Normally, a kid like you has like 9 offers right now and has Montana, Montana State, Portland State, Eastern Washington, you know, maybe a Nevada or Utah State. But because you got that Pac-12 one right off the bat, everybody kind of goes, eh, he's above us at this point.
Yeah.
How was
that's kind of how it feels. I mean, I've always told the schools that I don't count them out because you never know what could happen.
No doubt, man. How was your visit to Oregon State? What'd you think?
Oh, I loved it there. It was I loved the great walked in and the tailgating was right there, and I just loved like that college atmosphere. And I was talking to Coach Fence, the receiver coach, for a while, and he was super friendly. He was talking to us most of the time, and they showed us around a little bit, and we were just catching up and stuff. And I really liked it.
for a program that's struggling right now, and I mean, I don't think I'm breaking any news there by saying Oregon State win-loss record, they've struggled a little bit. There seems to be a lot of excitement and buy-in around the program. There seems to be a feeling that they're turning it around. What's the feeling like in the locker room? What's the feeling like with recruits? Is that there the same way?
Oh, yeah. No, when Coach Smith was at UW, they were one of the best teams in the country, and they still are. But now that he's at Oregon State, it's a lot of kids are starting to come there just because they know of who he is. And, you know, they're doing really good stuff. Their offense is producing lots of numbers. And I think that Coach Smith is going to really turn that program around. And the entire community in Corvallis is super excited about him. And I think that gets a lot of the recruits happy about him being there.
Now, when I talk to Coach Smith, he's pretty vanilla. He's a pretty vanilla guy. He's pretty reserved.
Yeah.
Is he the same way on the recruiting trail, or do you get a little bit of extra from him?
You know, he's kind of the same way, like you just said, kind of vanilla. Doesn't express a whole lot of emotion when you're talking to him, kind of a soft-spoken, and he's just kind of someone that you just, when he talks, you listen a lot. And so he's kind of, like you said, he's kind of vanilla, and it's the same way with the recruiting.
I think guys like you are kind of what it's going to take Oregon State to turn this around. Find really, really good athletic football players in the Northwest, on the West Coast, load up on those guys, maybe guys that are slept on and have a chip on their shoulder. How much do you feel like you fit in to kind of the traditional culture of Oregon State?
Oh, no, I think I fit in great. You know, they're a pass heavy, fast tempo offense, and that's what I'm used to at my high school. And with that whole chip on your shoulder thing, that's kind of how I've played my entire life. And you know, Oregon State has that. They have really nothing to lose going into every game. And so I think that if Oregon State would be a good program for me, I still got a lot to check out a lot of other schools. But you know, as of right now, they're my number one school. And you know, it's just I think I fit in pretty good there.
We're talking to three-star athlete Sawyer Racanelli, and I'm telling you, if you haven't watched his film, go watch his film. He's going to have a bunch of Pac-12 offers. This kid's an electric playmaker. It's ridiculous you don't have more offers. It really actually does shock me. I've picked out guys.
Thank you.
I've picked out guys in the past as like my guy. And in Southwest Washington, you are my guy. Playing for Hawkinson.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hawkinson's competing every year, it seems like, for a state title. What does that kind of mentality do for a high school kid where you know the expectations are high week in, week out, season in, season out to perform?
Yeah, no, we have huge expectations. We're actually coming off, we've run four league titles in a row, and we're coming for our fifth if we win these next two games. And our expectation is not really a league title anymore. It's a state championship. And we've kind of set that up for ourselves, being in the state playoffs the last three or four years, and expectations around practice are if you're a league championship team, you're not going to get very far in the playoffs in state. So it's raised that bar extra mentally, and it's tough, but it's nice at the same time.
Is there anybody else on your team that you feel like is a potential recruit? It seems like there's always a couple of kids, and I hate to leave anybody out. Is there anybody on your team you feel like is a little bit slept on or already has big time offers?
Oh no. Peyton Brammer, my ex receiver, he, 6'5", 200, crazy athletic. He has no offers right now. He's kind of more of a basketball player, but, if you watch his film, he doesn't have much of it. Cause he didn't make one last year or whatever, but no, he's definitely a Division I football player. He hasn't really played football much. He's only played the last two or three years, but he's big, can jump out of the gym, crazy hands, and I think coaches are sleeping on him really hard right now, and he's definitely a Pac-12 football player.
Talking to three-star wide receiver Sawyer Racanelli. He's from the state of Washington. Washington high school football is just at a different level right now than Oregon high school football. I don't know how else to say it. I love Oregon high school football. I cover the heck out of it. I love it. It means the world to me, but it's just a different level up in Washington, particularly in the class of 2020 and 2021. How good, for people who don't know, how good and how passionate are people about football in the state of Washington compared to Oregon? It's a short trip, but it feels like it's a lot different in terms of the town shutting down and everything.
Yeah, no, no high school football in Washington, it's Friday, everything's closed, everyone's heading out to the football games, no matter what, no matter how bad or good your team is, everybody shows up, and I feel like in the state of Washington, we just have that community support more than another state like Oregon or whatever, so I feel like high school football in Washington is definitely one of the best in the country.
Is there anybody else? I know you're not committed to Oregon State by any stretch. They're your favorite early, but is there anybody else in Washington that you see? I know this 2020-2021 class is absolutely loaded, but who stands out to you as maybe some of the top kids in Washington that you go, man, whoever gets those guys is getting a heck of a player?
You know, Savelle Smalls, the Garfield defensive end. I think it's JT. I don't know how to say his last name, from Eastside Catholic, but some of those kids, G. Scott, Sam Adams, those are kind of the kids that are the top tier in the state of Washington. And I think those kids are who I try and compete myself with every single game in and out. And I feel like those are probably the top tier kids in the state of Washington.
Man, I think you are right there. Savelle Small is one of the top five players in the country. I don't know how to say JT Tuamalu's name either. He's the number one rated player in the country for the class of 2021. G. Scott, a top 50 player nationally. There are some good players in Washington. You belong on that list, man. You are a special talent. Keep working, keep grinding, and I'm really, really looking forward to watching you play wherever you go.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Marcus, you've seen Sawyer Racanelli. Tell the people I'm not making it up. Sawyer Racanelli's nasty.
No, he is legit, man. When I was doing that play-by-play at his game, I think it was Jeff, told me that he had an offer from Oregon State. I was like, if Oregon State doesn't throw all their chips on the table to get this kid, because this is the kind of dude that is kind of like a Jamar Jefferson you build your program around.
And just taking that step back, that's one thing that was missing a little bit with Gary Anderson, and even a little, and Corey Hall didn't really have time to sink his feet into. It's not fair to say Corey Hall, but certainly Gary Anderson. They saw these kids, but they didn't find them, recruit them, and prioritize them the same way that Jonathan Smith has at Oregon State. And you look at the number of kids they've offered. Look at a guy like Corey Stover from Marshfield. That's a kid that potentially could end up being a heck of a football player at Oregon State. He's got to add some weight, but he's really good. And he's out of Marshfield, and he had an offer from Cal, didn't tweet it out, didn't even have Twitter, wasn't interested in that. And Oregon State comes in and says, no, 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 we want to build our program around you. We want to make you the type of kid that turns around the program we have. You look at Luke Musgrave out of Bend. Luke Musgrave had an offer from Oregon to come be a tight end. When Oregon State says, no, 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 it's going to take us some time, but you're the type of guy we build a program around. And that's the same thing with Sawyer Racanelli. Come be a staple guy. Are we a national title contender right now? No. But you can come in early, play early, and be a part of the culture turn. And I'm telling you, that's what worked for Jermar Jefferson. You want to find out how Jermar Jefferson, one of the top running backs in the entire country, I don't care what anybody says, he's one of the top backs in the country. You want to find out why that true freshman's at Oregon State? They offered him playing time and opportunity. USC comes in really late, they want him. Big time programs come in really late, they want him. And he sticks with Oregon State because he says, I can play and they're going to build around me. I'm not going to come in and be the third back or the fourth back or the fifth back. I'm not going to be in a rotation of four guys and I get eight carries a game. I might get 25 carries a game early. That appeals to kids. That's how you get really, really good athletes. And yes, those kids don't necessarily, when there's a big group of them playing as freshmen and sophomores, they don't necessarily win big games. But by the time they're second-year starters, third-year starters, and they're juniors and seniors, you have a chance at your peaks to compete for a Pac-12 title. And yes, that's a long way away, but there's a vision there. And it starts with going after kids like Sawyer Racanelli. And I'm telling you, if Oregon State offered a year from now, wouldn't be involved. Sawyer is nasty. Sawyer is a real one. Getting in early and having him early say, Oregon State's my favorite because they believe in me first. That matters. Coach Smith doing it the right way. Speaking of doing it the right way, Oregon is hosting a star-studded list of official visitors. They're putting all their eggs in this basket of this Washington-Oregon rivalry game. I'll give you the rundown of who's visiting. It's five-star special, and it's next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
I promised it at the beginning of the show. I promised it at the end of the last segment. It is time for Oregon's visitor list. Holy cow. Starting off, four-star center Isaac Johnson, one of the top 100 players in the entire country. By the way, we're starting with basketball. We got to get through the basketball guys first, and then we'll get to football. Four-star power forward Malik Hall out of Wichita, Kansas. He is the number 52 prospect in the country. Going down my list. Five-star center Nfale Dante from Wichita, Kansas, a teammate of Malik Hall's. He's a class of 2020 kid. He's the number 7 prospect in the entire country. Already offers from Kansas, Kentucky, LSU, Oklahoma State, and more. And Scotty Barnes, the 5-star small forward in the class of 2020, in the discussion for the top player in the entire country for the class of 2020. Currently listed at number 4, the number 1 small forward. He is special, not this week, but next week. 5-star guard Cole Anthony will be in town. Cole Anthony is the number 2 player in the entire country. That's 2 5-stars and multiple 4-stars just in the next 2 weeks for Oregon basketball. In football, I mean, the headliner, if you haven't been paying attention, the headliner is Kayvon Thibodeau. Kayvon Thibodeau is the number 1 prospect in the entire country, a defensive end, outside linebacker with offers from everybody. Top 5 of Florida, Florida State. I think I got this right. Top 5 of Florida State, Alabama, USC, and Oregon. That's off the top of my head. Kayvon Thibodeau is a program-altering talent. Elite talent. On top of that, Savelle Smalls making the return trip. Savelle Smalls, as Sawyer Racanelli mentioned, probably the best player or one of the best players in the state of Washington. He is a top five prospect, period, in the class of 2020. Julian Simon is only a sophomore, a 2021 prospect, but he's the number 4 athlete in the entire country. I'm telling you, Washington is going to be a pipeline. Yes, the Cali flock matters this year. Absolutely does. But you want to know why Oregon went after Cale Millen instead of Michael Johnson Jr. this year? Yes, they liked Cale Millen. The other part is that Cale Millen is connected in Washington, and Oregon wants to get its hooks in with Washington prospects, because in the class of 2021, Washington has almost as many, and they might have more, top 50 prospects nationally than California, Florida, or Texas. Washington is super loaded in the next 2 years. Cale Millen, by the way, visiting Oregon. Mace Funa, the highest rated linebacker to ever commit to Oregon, will be in town. Silas Starr and Jalen John, two of the top skill players in the state of Oregon in the class of 2020. Seth Figgins, the nation's number 7 tight end in the entire country for the class of 2020, will be in Oregon at Oregon. And Andy Alfieri, he will be the number 1 prospect in the state of Oregon by the time 24/7 Sports updates their rankings. Mark it down. It's done. He's my number 1 prospect. He's Jordan Johnson's number 1 prospect. Jordan joins the recruiting show, the recruiting podcast, every Tuesday, the Andrew Nimmick Recruiting Podcast. You can subscribe to that on iTunes. We've talked about this multiple times. Andy Alfieri is not only going to be a 4-star prospect. Andy Alfieri has a chance to be a top 5 or top 10 linebacker in the country. He is going to be an All-American. I had a chance to talk to him this week, and I have a pretty good relationship with Andy Alfieri. I love that kid. He's special. He's visited Oregon State. His brother, Mikey, plays at Oregon State. His older brother, Anthony, is a coach at Oregon State. Oregon State has an in. It's not going to be a done deal, but they've certainly got an in. He produced his film and released it. Since he's released his film this year, he's heard from Washington, USC, Oregon, Oregon State, and Notre Dame. They're all recruiting him now after seeing his film. Andy Alfieri is very, very special. And 5-star wide receiver Johnny Wilson in the class of 2020 visiting Oregon. I honest to goodness lost count of the number of five stars. I got to count it up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five five-star prospects visiting Oregon in the next 2 weeks. That is not bad, Marcus. Five five-star prospects in 2 weeks visiting Oregon, including the number one prospect. Ready? The number one prospect in the nation in football this year. The number five prospect in the nation in football next year. The number two recruit in the nation in basketball this year. And the number four recruit in the nation in basketball next year. And the number seven recruit in the nation for basketball next year.
They are absolutely killing it.
That's ridiculous.
That's so ridiculous.
And I just did that off the top of my head.
Right, and I thought you were going to stop with like the third one, and then you kept going. You see me give you that look.
It was intentionally a little bit over the top. But, yeah, Oregon's recruiting right now is just on fire. It really is stunning, and it is stunning. And Scott Frost is kind of right that Oregon isn't near a hotbed for recruiting, so it is kind of amazing what they're doing. And regardless of FBI probes and what you think of what's going on right now in the world of college basketball, Oregon is absolutely killing it. Marcus, it is that time. We come to you at the end of every show to give a prediction on the Oregon and Oregon State game. Only Oregon this week, but it's a big one.
It is a big one. Man, I have had this prediction in my head for weeks now.
Okay, good.
I have 31-24. I got to go with the Ducks.
Wow.
Only because it's at Autzen, right? Not only that being said, but Oregon is more physical offensively and defensively. And I don't know how Jake Brown hasn't been playing very well. And they don't really have go-to receivers. They have Fuller. But that's really it. After that, who do you go to?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I do, but you're wrong. Oregon's very physical up front. Washington, not as physical as they've been in past years. I don't think Oregon is going to be able to run for a ton of yardage. We just haven't seen them be dominant on the ground. They're certainly not yet. I think next year, maybe. Not yet. They don't have the combination of running backs and offensive line to just run over people. They're going to have to throw, and that's what Oregon does best. The problem, Washington's secondary is much, much, much better than Oregon's weapons outside. And Justin Herbert masks a lot of the problems Oregon's receivers and tight ends have, but they're problems nonetheless. That receiving core is not very good. I always say with receivers, you know where you're going. The defensive back doesn't. You're playing race. You're racing to a spot. And they don't know the spot. And Oregon receivers often lose that race. They have a really hard time getting separation. This is the best secondary they'll face. I think because of that, even as good as Justin Herbert is, they're going to have a hard time passing. They cannot be solely reliant on the run game. And Washington is very good offensively and may give this Oregon defense, which is good, but not spectacular fits. I will say, are you ready for this?
I'm ready, man.
Washington 38. Oregon 24. I think Washington beats them by two scores.
Like a comfortable two scores.
I think it's a comfortable win for Washington. And by the way, I'd love to be wrong. And before Oregon fans hit me up and they're like, you're a jerk, I hate you, I'd be happy to be wrong. I just know that Oregon's receivers are not very good. I mean, that's just people who understand football know they have a really hard time getting separation. And outside of Dylan Mitchell, who's only come on in the last couple weeks, they've really, really struggled. And if you really, really struggle with your skill players, Washington makes you pay. They just have. Outside of Alabama, who, again, controlled things on them a couple years ago physically between the tackles, Washington's been able to handle teams that just can't outplay them with skill guys.
Right.
And Oregon can't.
Yeah. So, well, Oregon's just going to have to find ways to get their athletes the ball in open field. And when that happens, they have to make the plays. Because if not... Well,
The other thing is Washington's discipline. They're going to limit the number of plays you get. And Oregon, with past opponents, has had a number of those where somebody leaks through and is wide open. They're only going to get a couple of those. So they're going to have to make tough catches. And if the drops come back that were plaguing this receiving core earlier in the year, it could get ugly. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to be wrong. But I think Washington wins it by two scores. And if they don't, Oregon is so far ahead of the curve from what we anticipated Mario Cristobal could do in year one. If they beat Washington, Mario Cristobal solidifies himself as an absolute permanent fixture. Next week, we got to go over the rundown of the games. Oregon, Oregon State. I'm sure we'll have more recruiting news on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. As always, thank you so much for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.